This is a HeadGum Podcast.
While Andrew and Craig believe the joy of discovery is crucial to enjoying any well-told tale, they will not shy away from spoiling specific story beats when necessary. Plus, these are books you should have read by now.
Aha, we got you.
Yeah, suckers.
You all thought that it was going to be something other than what it is, you dinks.
But it's not.
Welcome to Overdue. It's a podcast about the books you've been meaning to read. My name is Craig.
My name's Andrew.
And no, we are not reading a Chase Utley biography that doesn't exist, or The Elements of Style, or Skateboard Tough Again, or The Art of the Deal. Woof.
People asked for a hint midway through the week.
Uh-huh.
Well, and we gave them a hint and we said nonfiction. And we got a distressing number of guesses that were not nonfiction.
Well, people just thought that was a red herring. Yeah.
People were just maybe thought we were doing a jokey joke and they were like, oh, Skateboard Tough, obviously a biography of a skateboard tough.
We're not talking about Dianetics.
We're not talking about QAnon. We're not talking about
Marie Kondo was a good guess, but no.
That was a good guess.
I guess
somebody said The Magic by Rhonda Byrne, which is, I guess, nonfiction versus fiction. I guess that's in the eye of the beholder, huh?
I think it is. I mean, you know, some people wanted us to really, they really want us to read that Gray book, which I don't think is going to happen.
Wait, the Gray book?
Christian Gray.
I thought that was like a euphemism for something.
Oh, no.
Like how in a like a fantasy universe, there might be like a mythical tome just called the Gray Book.
Oh, sure.
Colloquially. That mix the Beatles white book and that Jay-Z black book together.
Yes.
As a mashup.
That's true. Mm-hmm. But Andrew, what are we talking about this week?
This week. They still don't know which of us it is. Somebody, which one of us read What to Expect When You're Expecting by Heidi Murkoff and Sharon Maisel,
uh-huh.
The fifth edition.
Which one of us read it, Andrew?
Was it me?
Was it you?
It was me.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting.
Susanna is having a baby and it's mine, everybody. Get out of here, you haters.
And the baby's father is you. Okay, thanks.
I'm doing a
Donahue
more
or whoever.
Doing a more dance. Yeah, so that's big news.
Yeah, we thought.
I think when we started the show, I think if you go all the way back to the earliest episodes, and I don't recommend doing this.
Uh-huh.
But if you did do that, I think that we had just gotten engaged, or we weren't quite engaged yet.
That sounds about right.
And then we got married, and then mm-hmm. we like moved to Philadelphia, and we bought a house,
mm-hmm.
and we've done all kinds of stuff. And now we're having a baby.
Oh, well, that's the plan.
And before you ask, we are not. I'm not going to talk about this a lot on Twitter anyway, because it's just none of it's a secret that I have with my special podcast friends. And also my boss at work, but I don't want to talk about it a lot on social media because it's just none of their business.
Sure. So you decided to talk about it on your HIT podcast.
I decided to talk about it on my HIT podcast, but which is a HIT podcast, but it still has small enough reach that it feels intimate. So don't make it weird, I guess, everybody.
Just sure. So we'll talk about that this week on the show. Because you read, how much of this book did you read?
So that's the other non-typical thing. So the first thing is that one of us is having a baby, and the second thing is that I didn't read all of this. So she is in her like 21st week right now, 21st, 22nd. So I read the book up through that,
mm-hmm.
and it's modeled as a textbook, and it says pretty explicitly like, you know, if a thing does not apply to you, and we can talk about that in a bit, then don't feel like you have to read it. So I haven't skipped a ton of stuff, but I did focus more on the stuff that had been more of a thing for our pregnancy so far.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Yeah.
So these are some good upfront caveats.
But yeah, I haven't read the whole thing.
Feelings, and right now I can tell.
Sure, fine. I didn't read the whole thing. I think the plan right now is to do a second episode toward the end.
Yeah.
Because over the summer at some point we're going to be doing a paternity leave thing, and probably we'll have a bunch of episodes recorded by then to air them. But we'll see. That's a thing for later.
Sure.
But yeah, it's a book that I've read a lot of. We've done like the author research, but I've not read the whole thing.
Okay.
That's by design. That's not like I ran out of time and then reverse engineered this excuse to get me out of it.
No, we made that call pretty early on when you realized how big the book was also. Mm. And that it just would have been too much. So this book was published in, 1984, I think was the first edition
was in 1984.
At least five editions.
The fifth edition, which is the current one, which is the one I am reading, was published in 2017, I believe. And so this segues into one actual criticism of the book that doesn't have anything to do with the book itself,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of pregnancy stuff, a lot of like baby accoutrement is stuff that you use like literally once or for a few months, and then the baby is too old for it, and then you move on. And so as there should be, there is a culture of like hand-me-downs and of giving away of like too small or not needed anymore, like clothes and furniture and all kinds of stuff. And so in that spirit, I think people frequently give away their copies of What to Expect When You're Expecting when they're no longer expecting. So the edition of it that Susanna actually got for free in one of our neighborhood Facebook groups is the fourth edition from 2008.
Okay.
And you wouldn't expect a ton to change, and I don't think that some of the like core medical stuff does, but every edition, I feel like, corrects or maybe overcorrects for things that happened in previous editions. So this edition, the fifth edition, makes sure to put like special boxes for dads in every chapter.
Sure.
Which we can talk about.
We will.
There is a passage that talks about, let me see if I can find it easily here, talks about the kinds of like families it's speaking to. A family is a family no matter what its makeup. It's the love that matters most. But as you read What to Expect When You're Expecting, you'll notice references to traditional family relationships. These references definitely aren't meant to exclude expectant moms and their families who don't mold neatly into that traditional family form. For example, those who are single by choice or by circumstances, who have same-sex partners or who have chosen not to marry their live-in partners. Rather, the use of the term like partner or spouse or partner is a way of avoiding phrases, for instance, your husband or significant other, that are more inclusive but also a mouthful to read. And it's interesting that this is where the book is like, I don't want to give you a mouthful to read when the whole rest of it is written the way that it is.
Sure. So let's talk about where the book came from. So
sure. I'm highlighting the differences in editions. Like those are a couple of the things. I think the fourth edition got some flack, or maybe the third edition. At some point there was an edition that got flack for like overemphasizing the healthy eating thing and like scaring people basically.
Well, so yeah, I want to get to that. I want to get that in order. So like she writes this in like the early 80s. She delivers the pitch for it when she is 8 or 9 months pregnant. She develops
I conceived
it.
A baby and then I conceived a book, and let's just say I didn't expect either.
Oh my gosh. She started the project with her mom, Arlene Eisenberg, and her sister, I think, Sandy Hathaway. Her mom has since passed, and Sandy no longer works on the series. And it's really Murkoff. And what's the name of the co-writer on this edition, Andrew?
Sharon Maisel.
Okay. This is from a 1995 New York Times article. When she was in her early 20s, she worked for an advertising firm figuring out how to sell things like spaghetti sauce. When she quit and became pregnant with her daughter Emma, she found that every pregnancy book she read filled her with dread. They convinced her that the fetus was doomed, either because of a hormone her doctor had prescribed her before she knew she was pregnant, or because of the few drinks she had drunk before she knew. The memory still annoys her. Out of that experience came What to Expect When You're Expecting. It was one of her personal crusades. Quote, the more women like ourselves read, the more we panicked. I was determined that no one have to go through what I went through. So it's interesting that you brought up the critique of like maybe it being a little too scary, because it seems like at least her initial goal was to like create a space to have some of those worries.
Like, listen, everything about this is scary.
Yeah,
every single thing about this entire process is scary. Like at the 20-week ultrasound, a couple of weeks ago, or like a week and a half ago. Man, time also doesn't mean anything anymore. So that's something that you should know about. But like every doctor's visit, and I've been to all but like her very first midwife visit, where she had, it was basically just a big questionnaire where they'd talk through like her entire medical history. And so she was like, you know, you're not going to have a lot to do. I want you to be at everything, but you don't need to be at this one. So I wasn't at that one. But everything, like every person we have seen and talked to has literally said the word textbook in reference to this pregnancy so far. We had a little trouble conceiving, but it was on the long end of normal. We can talk about that. We can talk about parts of it if you want, but not the whole thing.
Man, you don't know when to stop right now.
Listen, it's what's oversharing. I'm talking about my first child on a stupid podcast. But everything's been textbook. Everything's been great. Like she had queasiness, but no pronounced morning sickness. Like she is... We've not had any huge bumps in the road so far, but at the 20-week ultrasound, the doctor came in and was telling us about these like bubbles or something in the brain where like the brain fluid gets made. And he said that it's 99% of the time, it's nothing. You have none of the, like in this test you already got done, like none of the chromosomal abnormalities that would also point to this condition exist. I am telling you just because it's the only thing to even talk about and it's nothing. And when he was telling me about that, like my heart was in my throat. Like for anything to even be kind of maybe potentially out of whack is terrifying. And so reading about it is... in some ways terrifying, though I guess the fact that I only read up to where we've been through so far made it in this book at least a little less scary than it might have been, because we've already gotten past a lot of it. But yeah, it's just innately scary.
Yeah.
And if you're not worrying about it, then I don't understand how you're doing that.
Sure.
And can you let me know?
So as we've said, there are five editions. This is like What to Expect is like a full-on brand now. There's a website and apps and trackers. You can go check it out, I guess. They do have a foundation that's designed to help moms in need. There are at least a dozen sequels or spin-off books. That's like, you know, everything from What to Expect at Bedtime to What to Expect... before you're expecting, to What to Expect When Mommy's Having a Baby, you know, everything you could
expect. Is that for kids?
Or you read it to your kid? Unclear. I don't know what it is.
Okay.
Yeah. But as you said, there have been criticisms of the different editions. There was an article in 2005 already about that the opening...
You mean already? That was 21 years after
that's a good point. That's a good point.
What are you talking about?
That's a bad qualifier. it opened with an anecdote about a Boston hospital that in its lit about what you should be reading, like explicitly warned against reading this book. And as we've been saying, the pushback has been that it overemphasizes negative worries rather than just empowering you that some of those are normal. It didn't do a great job of distinguishing between hypothetical concerns and urgent ones. And the thing that would happen over every edition, and this is something you alluded to too, Andrew, they would like hear from women whose experiences weren't included in the book. And so they would try to include them in the next edition, but perhaps go overboard and put in too many, like, oh God, this could happen to you. And then, as you said, the problem of like a viral success is that they would be trying to make changes every 4 to 6 weeks when there was a new printing, and it was just too fast. And everybody's passing around these old versions of the book.
Right. So. And so the fifth edition, and I'm not sure the extent to which this exists in older editions, but every chapter begins with, like, it's split up into a couple of like pre-pregnancy chapters, and then from there every month gets its own chapter that first breaks down week by week what you can expect to be happening, and then talks about I don't know if symptoms is the right word, but I guess it's the closest. But like the things that are commonly experienced during these months. And every one of these sections starts with, you might have some of this, you might not. Like, every pregnancy is different. Even different pregnancies in the same person are different. It's kind of wild, actually, like the extent to which this is just a mysterious black box that nobody understands.
Yeah, there's a big article about that recently.
There's a lot of information in here, and basically it's like, you know how we don't know why we sleep still? Like,
sure.
We haven't figured that out. It's kind of like that.
Uh-huh.
It's like, this might happen. You might get nauseous. You might fart all the time. Like, it might. The book talks about farting so much.
That's great.
So much more than any book that I think we've read in 300 and something episodes. I didn't find it alarmist. I didn't find that it focused over much on the negative. It's just always hedging, like, this is a thing that you might have.
It has
if you
to.
Do,
yeah.
Here's
yeah.
why. Or here's why it's normal, or
sure.
here's what to do about it, or ways to think about it. But if it doesn't apply to you, then skip it. Don't worry about it. So it does seem to be trying to head those people off at the pass. And as somebody who's written to address like commenters ahead of time, who has like written stuff specifically to try and head complaints off, I understand the hedging.
Before we take our break, I do just want to put this in the context of like the tradition of parenting lit. So you can go all the way back to the 1600s, Andrew, to when we started using to parent as a verb. And around that time, a dude named John Walmott wrote, "Before I got married, I had 6 theories about bringing up children. Now I have 6 children and no theories."
That reminds me of a Simpsons line.
Sure.
Homer says that he has 3 kids and no money, and that he would like to have no kids and 3 money.
In 1693, John Locke wrote Some Thoughts Concerning Education, where he encouraged everybody to raise virtuous Puritan kids. In 1762, Rousseau wrote A Meal on Education, where Rousseau said that babies are basically cool, but socialization ruins them, and it's civilization's fault if they turn out bad.
Seems like passing the buck a little too far.
A little bit. We move into the 19th century, and an economic sociologist, Viviana Zelitzer, said that by the end of the 19th century, we had realized that children were economically worthless but emotionally priceless. Is her quote, which basically we stopped making kids work.
We did, and that, see, no, I'm not going to joke about.
Nope.
We just used to be able to make them work in the fields, you know?
Yes.
Like, you had a kid because...
You had a farm.
Because you didn't have, like, ZipRecruiter yet. So that was the easiest way to get new employees and expand your headcount.
Sure, sure. Pre-World War II, we get, like, treatises on rigid schedules and warning against excessive affection because, like, kissing your kid on that forehead more than once is a good way to spread germs, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
There was, like, a whole government series of pamphlets about that. And then we get to Benjamin Spock in 1946, which is the common sense book of baby and child care, which for a period of time was like the book, because he was like, hey, treat kids as individuals. The quote is, trust yourself, you know more than you think you do. And a lot of the criticisms on him since have been like some dated gender stereotyping and an over reliance on like anecdotal evidence. But it did kind of set the table for everyone having babies in the boomer age. And like, you're living in suburbs away from your parents, so they can't help you directly. And like, you need someone to tell you what to do. Maybe you have some newfound affluence post-war and you're just like, well, I'm trying to give my kid the best, which is not a thing that people thought about the same way before that.
Yeah, I guess it's talking about the, like, we are no longer in the it takes a village.
Yes, correct.
Model of, mm-hmm. of parenting where you have like grandparents or aunts or correct. Uncles or somebody else around to help with childcare. And listen, as somebody whose eyes have reasonably been open to the amount that childcare costs, I don't understand why we stopped. The yep. other way. We should go back. We should go back to the other way.
And then this
costs so much money.
This book comes in the 80s, which is at the tail end of the boomer generation having their kids. So like, I think generationally this book is interestingly positioned, and also it is one of the first major texts that addresses like pregnancy from a like speaking directly to the pregnant woman as opposed to medical journals or
well, because I have to assume that like pregnancy is too close to sex and we can't talk about that.
Yeah, but also you'd like, I imagine doctors in the early 20th century would rather write a book for the husband to tell their wife what to do kind of thing. You know, like not as helpful.
It's not that women can't read. It's just that are they doing it right? You know, like,
are these jokes anything? But is I think there's something in the like Murkoff working with her mom and her sister to make a book about what it is to have a kid that like spoke to women and has spoken to women since. So.
And the cute sort of circular thing about the fifth edition is that the woman on the cover cradling her pregnant belly is Heidi Murkoff's daughter, the one who she was pregnant with when she pitched the book in the first
place.
That
is cute.
And then on the back cover is a picture of that baby.
Neato.
Yeah.
Cool.
So just like bring her into the franchise, you know?
Start him young.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break, Andrew, and then I want to hear about what is actually in this book. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Craig.
Sounds like you might not have a lot of time on your hands in the near future.
Yeah, that's what I've been led to believe.
Well, one of our sponsors wants to help you out. This week it is Blinkist. And if you're like Andrew, the list of books you want to read or that people suggest you read is never ending and always expanding, but you simply do not have time to read them all. Blinkist has solved your long list of must-reads once and for all. It is the only app that takes thousands of the best-selling nonfiction books and distills them down to their most impactful elements so that you or Andrew can read or listen to them in under 15 minutes, all on your phone. You will expand your knowledge and learn more in just 15 minutes than you can in almost any other way. Plus, you can listen anywhere. I imagine Andrew could listen while he was walking between rooms in his house or mm-hmm. running to doctor's appointments mm-hmm. or whatever he needs to do as he gets ready to dad it up. The Blinkist library is huge, from timeless classics like Think and Grow Rich to things like books we've covered, such as How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. That might be the one that you should check out first. And they're constantly,
'cause I gotta win my baby's friendship and then influence them.
That's true.
It's very important.
And Blinkist is constantly curating and adding new titles from best of lists, so you're always getting the most powerful ideas. And 5 million people are using Blinkist to expand their minds 15 minutes at a time. Get started today. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/overdue to start your free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/overdue to start your 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/overdue. Okay, Andrew, I want to know what's like in this book.
You want to know what's in this bad boy?
Yeah.
So like I mentioned before, it's broken up by months, mostly, like the bulk of it is. Let me just go to the table of contents and I can kind of give you a sense of what is in this. Not so part one, first things first, we should honestly read the table of contents for every book that we do.
We don't do that often enough. I was just thinking.
Yeah, let's just put this on the table.
Go. Okay. Read me the table of contents.
I was making
a
point. So first things first, it's talking about, it talks about how to tell whether you're pregnant, like different ways to test. The fact that a false positive on a pregnancy test is super, super rare.
Okay.
It is way more likely that you will take one and not be like, and be pregnant, but like you haven't produced the hormones yet to make it show.
Good to know.
And then talking about like how to choose a doctor and the different kinds of doctors you can choose, like midwives and like actual, I don't want to say actual doctors, because midwives are fully, they get certified, they go to school, like they're actual everything.
So, but you mean like OBGYNs?
Yeah. That's exactly what I mean. There you go. Nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about, you know, how to prepare to eat for 9 months and things you can expect. Then part two is count down the months. So it breaks down the months 1 through 9 and then talks about all the weeks. You might be interested to know. I don't know how much you know about pregnancy, honestly.
Teach me. That's what I'm here for.
Like I mentioned, it took us 11 months from when we started trying to when Suze actually got pregnant. And they say you should go for a year before you start to worry and to talk to like fertility people.
Mm.
Because we are in like our early 30s, that like that's not, I think when does geriatric pregnancy start?
It's like distressingly early, but I believe it's 35.
Because of that, and because of some family history stuff, we started, you know, asking about stuff a little bit earlier than this. We started talking about fertility stuff around like 5 or 6 months. And so in that phase, I learned a lot of the stuff that comes up in the early, like pre-pregnancy phases of this book. So when they're calculating the number of weeks pregnant that you are, they're not talking about conception. They're talking about the time from your last period.
Sure.
So the first 2 weeks of pregnancy, you actually are not pregnant, which is a real mind trap. You know, if you
it's
think
like
about
spring
it,
spring training, like you start playing baseball, but the games don't count yet.
It is like that.
This is how I need to learn things, Andrew.
I have to put it in the frame of baseball.
Maybe who knows? Maybe other sports will help. I'll find out in the next half an hour of this show.
But then it goes through every month. I read up through, like, I read most of the fifth month because we're not quite through that yet.
Okay.
But yeah, every section starts with.
Is it like a Q&A? Is it like a textbook?
It's not even a Q&A. It's more of a textbook. So let's break this down. Chapter 6, the second month, approximately 5 to 8 weeks, talks about just like general table setting stuff. Even if you're not telling anyone you're expecting yet, and even though you're definitely not showing it, your baby's probably starting to spill the beans to you. Not in so many words, but in so many symptoms. So it's talking about morning sickness and bloating and other stuff. There's the next subhead, your baby this month, breaks it down week by week. Your body this month, along with images of your horrible alien fish baby and just the high level, what your physical and emotional symptoms might be. Go for it.
I was going to ask, you mentioned one of the things that said, like, whether or not you're telling people, how much is this part of the book concerned with kind of like the social dance of how people announce or not, or what their dynamics are? Or is it really just focused on like, yo, this is your body. This is your body on pregnancy.
No, it does cover the social stuff, and it says as with a lot of things that it says, you know, it is your decision when to tell people.
Sure. It is your decision when to have a podcast and tell a bunch of people.
Right. A lot of people wait until like 12 weeks, which is when the not that miscarriages don't happen after 12 weeks, but that most of them happen before that.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, statistics.
So, yeah. And just talks about, you know, are you going to want to like talk to other, if you do have a miscarriage, like that's a big, like emotional thing for a lot of people. Are you going to want to have people to talk about? Are you not going to want to go around to everybody who you got excited for you and like tell them?
Yep.
And have to like live that disappointment over and over. It tries to lay out in pretty clear terms, you know, it is your decision. Here are some things to think about if you haven't thought about this before.
Sure.
And because I have had to think about all this in real time before I read the book, like I was like, oh yeah, duh.
Sure.
But I didn't know any of that stuff. I didn't know anything.
Yeah, it seems like this book is
it's really geared to people who don't know anything about anything,
well,
which is
yeah.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, and that seems to be the, like, you hand it to someone or you hand a book like this to someone if maybe you don't, you know, you won't be there to have all these conversations with them. So, like, here's something to get you started to think through a bunch of stuff. And then if you have more questions, like, go ask someone in real life.
Yeah, like they frequently, and while they do cover a little bit of alternative medicine stuff in the book, it always says this thing has or has not been shown in studies to be effective, or like or like there is not enough research, this might be an old wives' tale, like always consult your doctor.
Okay.
Like
on a
whole range of like nutritional stuff. So I was a little tiny bit worried going in that it might give too much credence to like the goop stuff to like vaccines as a choice. And no, it's pretty firm on all.
There's
that
a whole
stuff.
Section on their website about what they cite and who they have worked with to make sure that this book is at least on the up and up, even if your pediatrician might recommend a different text. It sounds like they are doing their work to make sure it's not misrepresenting things.
Well,
but
a doctor
did not write this. That's also
right. Yeah, no, a doctor definitely didn't write this. It's written like it is written with medical stuff in mind, but it is, you know, it's very much from a lay person to other lay people, where lay people are people who haven't been pregnant before.
Sure.
But it does a not bad job of covering sort of the intangibles of it. So in the second month, it says one of the emotional things you might be dealing with is a sense of unreality about the pregnancy. Is there really a baby in there?
Oh, sure.
And that was a thing, like Susanna within the last like a month or so has become like visibly more pregnant. So this is not a thing anymore. But for the first like 2 or 3 months, it was definitely like, I'd feel tired a lot and nauseous sometimes, but I look the same. I go to the doctor and there's stuff in there, but I don't feel like it. So like, is this happening? Is this happening yet?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember you guys talking about that, 'cause we talked about this pretty early and it was a few months before you guys were like, oh yeah, this is, oh no, we got on this highway now.
like y'all were the first people we told, partly because we're close personal friends and partly because I don't know if it's both. Laura in particular knows who is drinking at a party.
She's on the
and
hunt.
Who is not.
She wants
and
to
she's,
know.
She's always got her head on a swivel looking for people who have not announced their pregnancy yet.
Yeah, it's true. She wants to, she wants to be there for people. She wants to get them stuff. She's like raring to go.
So picture of the alien fish baby, picture of what your like reproductive system, your you know, everything looks like inside you. What you can expect at this month's checkup, because you should be in, and we have been going every month to just get routine checkups. Like if so at 20 weeks, we had an ultrasound at 8 weeks and at 20 weeks. We had one a little bit before 8 weeks just because we were also doing fertility stuff. But I think like a 8-ish week and a 20-ish week ultrasound is the most common.
Yep.
And then you don't do that. Like, people think about ultrasounds a lot, I think, when they think about going to the doctor for pregnancy stuff. And that only really happens twice unless there's
extenuating
a specific reason to be looking otherwise. So yeah, every month you just basically go, you get some like some baseline tests done, you describe the symptoms to your person, and they ask questions to try and find like red flags. But yeah, really it's for us, because we've not had any issues so far, it's been mostly just going in and talking to somebody for 20 minutes and then leaving.
Sure.
What you may be wondering about is the next subhead, and then that's when it starts to go through symptoms. So this second month talks about heartburn, talks about food aversions and cravings, talks about veins, just like a lot about veins, because a lot of the weight that you put on in pregnancy is like more like just extra blood, just like a bunch of extra blood.
Ooh, that's cool to think about.
Is it?
Yeah. I don't often think about how much blood is in my or any person's body.
Well, because so, I just wanted to be
in there.
Because I'm not
a vampire.
I don't need to know how much of it is in there. I just need to know like that there's enough.
But it's interesting to think like, oh, maybe that person has more blood. What are they doing with it? Well, in this case, I know what they're doing with it. But
God, you sound like a serial killer.
Well, I sound like a vampire.
Hey. How much blood you got in there? How much blood you got in them guts?
So now I'm just thinking of the worst possible people to read this book. Like, what kind of monster people would read this book, and what would they do with it?
Vampires, I think they would go for pregnant ladies because they got a bunch of extra blood in there, but two questions.
Yeah.
Do you have to raise the vampire baby?
If the baby becomes a vampire,
sire the mother, to use like Buffy and Buffy language, are you also turning that baby into a vampire? I think if Buffy had run for 4 or 5 more seasons, they might have covered this, but I don't think that they did.
Andrew, I am not keen to answer this question because it creeps me out.
Yeah, but I'm just saying. So that's the first question. Second question, are all the extra hormones in that, like, are they going to do a number on you? And that's why you don't want pregnant lady blood.
That's very possible. It might taste different. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It might taste different. It might just like make you feel weird.
Yeah.
There's a lot of estrogen and stuff in there.
Yeah.
Talking about achy, swollen pelvis, talking about how your skin breaks out because not everybody glows. Some people just get a bunch of zits.
Sure, sure.
What, eczema?
Uh-huh.
Come and go belly.
Stop.
Which is what the book defines as just like gassiness, basically. And how you might sometimes look pregnant, but not look pregnant other times.
You haven't said anything that sounds more 80s until right then. That sounds like a real 80s phrase.
It talks about passing gas a lot. Okay, let's talk about the prose in the book a little bit.
Okay.
So that's basically how it's structured. There are a couple chapters later in the book in the table of contents that talk about after the baby is born, just a little bit of postpartum stuff. But I think they're going to try and upsell you to the specific volumes that they've written about that.
Yeah, sure.
But there are also subsequent chapters about complications, about losing a pregnancy.
Okay.
About, you know, getting sick when you're pregnant and medications and stuff. That's sprinkled throughout, but there's a whole separate part of the book that is for that.
Sure, sure. So what is the prose like?
So the phrase, the term expecting,
yeah,
is already a euphemism, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because we don't want to say pregnant.
Sure.
You want to say that you're expecting, and the assumption is that you're expecting a baby.
Yes.
Because you're pregnant.
Uh-huh.
The book is chock-a-block with euphemisms that drive me absolutely up the wall, including passing gas, packing on the pounds, piling on the pounds, There is a, when they're talking about pregnancy tests, they say that as easy as 1, 2, pee.
No. Okay, but that's sort of
it's
funny.
It's constantly talking about, like, just every pregnant woman is just standing in front of an open freezer, upending a half gallon of ice cream into her face at any given time. Every man is just like a sandwich-eating, blondie, Dagwood idiot who can barely be counted on to like pick his underwear up off the floor.
Yeah, so like,
it's written in a very voicey style that I think for most people will read as colloquial and comforting.
And but, maybe like joshy a little bit.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Yeah.
Maybe like what we're laughing at is like maybe you're, I don't know that all of it you're supposed to laugh with, but maybe some of it. Like 1, 2, P is a joke. Like, let's give credit where credit is due.
1, 2, P is a joke.
But I don't know if like the kind of like gender norms or the stereotypes are meant to be like playfully so, right?
I think they're mostly playful.
Okay.
I am bristling at them a tiny bit because it's just over and over again, like so often.
Okay, sure.
The for dad's box is something about like how you shouldn't be like a 1950s sitcom dad idiot.
Okay.
For like a second, if you can deal with that, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of fascinating because like this book is still being, you know, we've talked about the different editions and how recent this one is, but maybe in the 80s those like played better or they didn't sound,
I bet they did. Like this is talking about how in early pregnancy a common nausea trigger can be smells. Like you become really sensitive to smell.
Okay.
And one of the things that it suggests you might do about that, ask those who are regularly within sniffing distance of you and who you know well enough to ask to be extra considerate of your sensitive smell status. Get your spouse to wash up, change his clothes, and brush his teeth after stopping for a chili cheeseburger. Suggest that pals go easy on the perfume when they're with you. I'm just going to search for wings real quick.
I just like the
idea. Just doing a search for wings. For dads, those crazy cravings. Have you noticed your spouse is gagging over food she used to love or going gaga over food she's never eaten before or eaten in such peculiar combinations? Try not to tease her about these cravings and aversions. She's as powerless to control them as you are to understand them. Instead, indulge her by keeping the offending foods out of smelling distance. Love chicken wings? Love them somewhere else. Surprise her with the pickle melon and swish sandwich she suddenly can't live without. Go the extra mile or 2 miles for that pineapple pizza and you'll both feel better. I do appreciate that the book identifies pineapple pizza as deviant garbage food that only a crazy pregnant lady could eat.
No, this book and me are in a fight now.
It is being playful about it, but it is playing into those like sitcom pregnancy things where you're just like eating pickle ice cream and that's the defining thing about
like
pregnancy.
It sounds like, you know, think about the trickle down, you know, think about the 80s trickle down. I'm thinking about like what attitudes I might have absorbed by watching cartoons in the 90s of like stereotypes of parents. And I feel like a lot of the food craving stuff was like given to me through like episodes of Rugrats or some nonsense, whereas just like we can play some fast, quick hits for a parent that might be in the room watching this cartoon, and then we're going to move back to like the main kid characters.
Mm-hmm.
But here's some like common tropes that we can play for a laugh. And it sounds like in this book, maybe they were fresher when they were written in the 80s. And whether or not it's fresh now, it's like, just go for broke. Just hit all of them all at once. Because that's the only way to make it maybe work, if you can.
Yeah, just like every time there's a pregnancy storyline on a TV show, what are you going to get? You're going to get weird food cravings. You're going to get mood swings. You're
sure.
Gonna get like maybe a reference to like swollen feet or something.
Sure.
Maybe you'll get a reference to piling on the pounds and not fit into your clothes anymore.
Like, I don't like piling or packing on. Those are not great verbs. I don't love.
It's the weird thing. The book talks about how it's like you should be gaining weight when you're pregnant. If there's one time in today's diet obsessed culture where you should be stopping dieting, it's when you're pregnant and a baby is relying on you for a bunch of extra nutrients and stuff. But the way that it talks about weight gain is always so weird.
Yeah.
It's so affected and calling attention to itself. And I don't know. Like I get that body stuff is hard and like body image stuff is hard. And so of course
maybe
it's going to focus a lot on that because it's going to be a thing that a lot of people are going to have a complicated feeling about.
Yes. So maybe like play to an extreme version of it so that like maybe the reader doesn't even feel that way about it, but the book creates space where you can like feel as good or as bad as you want. Sure. That's the best version of this. Maybe it sounds like
you might like maybe the average reader of the book is not slamming the whole thing at once. That's also true. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, because you did not start this several months ago.
I didn't know because I don't want to. there is no one right answered for any of this. There is no
sure
correct source of. There are definitely wrong sources of information, but there are lots of different ways to do this right.
Yeah.
And a lot of what I got from this book reading it is just stuff that I got by going to doctor's appointments with Suze, by talking with her about how she's just how she's feeling day to day. Tonight, actually, like as we speak, tonight was the first time in her pregnancy so far where she went upstairs to go to bed, but then had to come back downstairs because she got hungry again.
Okay. So like, yeah. So what you're kind of talking about this book mostly covering stuff that you had hit because of where you were encountering the book in your journey, but also that like there are other places to get it. It's not necessarily groundbreaking anymore, even though it may have been 30 years ago.
I don't want to sound like I'm being too negative on the book because I'm just it is for a specific. I feel like it's for a specific kind of person. It's for somebody who is experiencing their first pregnancy, is kind of scared about it. Like I feel like this is the one that everybody just kind of passively knows about because it's used so often as like a joke construction for other like book titles or for like headlines of news articles or for whatever.
It's meant to be
conversational and comfortable and also in a lot of cases to be a starting point.
Yes.
Because most of the time my experience of this has been focused more around the financial end of stuff and the like logistical end of stuff because that's who I am as a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
But most of the time, I think somebody who's doing this for the first time is just looking for a place to start, like something to ground you because this is so far outside of your realm of experience.
Yeah, yeah.
If you've never done this before, it's stuff that's never even occurred to you to think about, you know?
Yeah. So the article I cited before from 2005, Expecting Trouble, The Book They Love to Hate by Jodi Kantor in the New York Times, was talking about, you know, the medical backlash to this book, as I said before, the process of like, there's like a, I don't know if it was in a section you read or not, Andrew, but there was a like anecdote about a baby's hiccups possibly being this like really terrible thing that caused a bunch of people a whole bunch of freakouts, and then like later was either taken out or edited or something. Because Murkoff was just having to respond to criticism regularly. But this section, this part towards the end of the article, I think maybe speaks to where the book like lives now culturally. The internet has given women more knowledge with which to complain about what to expect, a place to air their grievances, and perhaps more important, a peer-to-peer approach more varied and responsive than any books. The users are seeking specific information, not plowing through a book from start to finish. And the What to Expect books are premised on the idea that knowing about such problems can lessen their horror when they do occur. Again, like, it sounds like this book was trying to do a thing that we have other resources for now, and also it is trying to be a little too comprehensive at a time when, like, you can go seek out specific information on any one question you have.
Yeah, the most important thing I feel like it's doing from my perspective is it's just in every chapter, especially the month by month chapters, it is defining a range of typical behavior.
Okay. That feels
in a way
useful.
Like, and listen, maybe that's going to worry you if you are outside of the typical range. Like, I am speaking as somebody who is married to someone. I'm not even experiencing it myself. Yep. I'm married to someone who, by all accounts, has had a textbook typical, like, even mild pregnancy, especially for a first pregnancy.
Yeah.
Because as the book points out a few times, once you've been pregnant once, a lot of stuff has stretched out. You've become attuned to more things. You know what stuff feels like.
Yep.
And so you're more capable of, like, your body has an easier time. You have an easier time a lot of times. Like, our friend Catherine, who's on Appointment Television with me, atvpodcast.com.
Never heard of it.
Her first pregnancy her pregnancy with her first child, as I understand it, was pretty tough. Mm. And her pregnancy with her second child was, you know, mostly uneventful, as these things are counted.
Sure.
But yeah, it's just, I don't think it's trying to tell everyone everything, but I do think that it is summing up a lot of, like, typical pregnancy stuff and just telling you, listen, this is not usually something to be worried about. Here's where it might be something to worry about. Go talk to your doctor.
Sure.
And then I will outline all the different kinds of doctors you can go to talk to.
Okay.
And why you might. It's even careful to say that you might be more inclined to go with an OB if you're anticipating a more complicated pregnancy or if you're having more trouble with stuff, like going to the midwife and the uncertified end of things, or like home births or that kind of stuff, is strongly encouraged only if everything seems to be going fine so far.
Okay.
And even then, you know, it gives a couple like contingency things that you might need to know about.
Sure. The only other thing I want to ask about is, like, we've talked a little bit about the food stuff. And we mentioned at the top of the show that it was kind of critiqued initially for what was called, and we didn't say this, the best odds diet, which is what then got spun off as what to eat when you're expecting. Does that phrase ring a bell? Has that come up at all?
It does not. I think that maybe got edited out. I didn't read it. And then if you search for best odds, it does not come up.
Okay. So there has been pushback even on that phrase alone as a, like, that's not, what are the odds
best
that
odds
we're talking about? And odds of what? And, you know, immediately a roulette table comes to mind. But then that, like, that all got spun off as what to eat when you're expecting. Was there anything that stuck out to you aside from the kind of cartoonish pickle sandwiches stuff? Anything that that jived particularly with your own experience or other things you've heard?
It's mostly just, it gives you some guidelines for eating healthy and defining what that is and why you might want to do it.
Okay.
Talking about trying to get sugars from fruits first.
Okay.
Eating like, I don't know, like olive oil based things or like nuts or kind of trying to get that good like fat in there. But also saying, you know, if you do eat a lot of ice cream, and it is talking about ice cream a whole lot, it is fine if you are going to eat junk sometimes. But like here are some exercise guidelines.
Oh, sure.
And why you might want to follow them. here is how to eat well. You know, if you're getting the urge to eat a bunch of ice, like, it's probably some kind of iron deficiency.
I've heard
go
of
see
that.
Your doctor
yes.
about it.
Uh-huh.
But there's no specific, like, if you don't eat like this, then your baby's going to be a failure and they'll never get into Harvard and
your
baby will be terrible.
I was wondering if there was like a Pokemon training evolution kind of chart where, like, if you eat 16 bananas, your kid's going to be good at this. And if you eat like nothing but seaweed, your kid's going to be good at this.
There is stuff like if you eat peanut butter. Some studies have shown that your kid might be less likely to have a peanut allergy.
Okay. Okay.
Or if you work at a job with a lot of heavy machinery, it might increase the chances that your child will have some kind of hearing loss.
Oh. I thought that maybe you were going to say that your baby could just lift a bunch. Like, your baby would just be like super powerful.
No.
But no. Okay.
No, it's mostly pointing out the baby can sense, like, even though it's, I think our fetus's eyelids are still sealed shut, but like they can sense light and noise.
Okay. Okay.
From earlier than you might intuitively think that they can.
Sure. Sure.
So one of the things that the book talks about, as we've been discussing for a while, is that it's about like food cravings and how your body feels when you're pregnant and all kinds of wild stuff that I can talk about secondhand, but can't talk about firsthand. So here's Susanna.
our resident expert, Susanna.
Yeah, I'm the pregnancy expert because I've been pregnant for 21 weeks.
That's you.
Basically, it's just wild to know that you're creating a person.
Sure.
Like cell by cell, but you're not actually doing anything. You're just doing everything you can to not like get in the way of that process.
Yeah, you're just like eating cookies and
stuff. And you just turn the cookies and you just turn the cookies into like bones and blood and stuff. And it's just
how
like,
much blood do you have in you right now?
I don't know.
Oh, we did talk about how a lot of pregnancy weight gain is just blood.
Oh,
it's just
I didn't
like
know
extra
that.
Blood and stuff.
That's cool.
Man, you should read this book, What to Expect When
Okay. But yes, just like you just are sitting there hoping that all the brain and the organs and the skin are like getting put together in the right order, but you can't really do anything about that. So it's very weird. And then every now and then you feel like something fluttering in your stomach and you're like, is that anything that is that a human person that's sharing my corporeal form, or is that like the fact that I am eating a sandwich?
Yeah, because you can't quite, not for a few weeks yet, are you supposed to be able to feel stuff from the outside, but between, I think the book said like 18 and 22 or 24 weeks.
I was reading 25 weeks.
Yeah.
Especially, and it's usually later with first pregnancies. Yeah. Like all the milestones happen later with first pregnancies because your body's just not used to
your
being pregnant.
Like, what is happening?
Yeah. Your brain is thinking that too.
But yeah, I haven't felt anything yet, but no. You felt something.
But I can't really be sure that it's anything. It just feels like maybe something's moving, but it could also just be my stomach digesting food.
Yeah, it
like,
could be a cookie. You don't know.
It could be a cookie.
Well, that's cool.
So yeah, I'll keep you updated, I guess,
thanks
when I'm
for
sure.
Thanks for the update. What
in our pregnancy sidebar.
What do you think people should expect when they're expecting, Susanna?
I don't know, to go to the doctor a lot and to have them take your blood all the time.
Oh man, they
and
do
just
take your blood a lot.
And just to like roll with it and try not to worry too much, I guess. My sister-in-law is a midwife, and so whenever I have questions in between appointments, I just text her, and up till this point, she's mostly been like, whatever you want to do is probably fine. Like I texted her today to ask her if they say that you're supposed to sleep on your left side, that it's best to sleep on your left side for like circulation reasons. And I was like, is that like a big deal right now? And she's like, no, do whatever you want. Like literally sleep however you want until you can't sleep that way anymore. That's ridiculous. And I was
maybe
like,
that's
cool,
how you get a left-handed baby.
Like if I had like super high blood pressure or something like that, then the situation would be different. But knock on wood, so far everything's progressing as normally as possible. So let's keep that up.
You just wanted us to have one of those left-handed devil babies like you.
That's me.
I don't think that's genetic at all, right? Is it?
I don't think it is, no.
Because we're both right-handed.
You just gotta wish it. I'm so happy that we have a weird space can opener that is not a normal can opener, because I can't use normal can openers because I'm left-handed.
Oh, because of your left-handedness. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's very difficult.
It's very sad. And here I'll edit in some like Sarah McLachlan music.
In the left
As I
hand
always do when we talk about your
the
left
angels. Nothing got done because they're left-handed and the world hates them.
You're an idiot.
I'm glad that you're feeling
both
good,
idiots,
Suze.
So that's okay.
Thanks for coming by to say hey.
Yeah, sure. Okay, bye. I'm going to bed.
All right.
So how do you feel, Pops?
Now Susanna's gone, I can talk about how I really feel.
Like, what? So you kind of like talked a little bit about the chicken wing chili burger dads, and I know that you're not that. So was there anything in this book that was like, oh, that is how I'm feeling? Or is there stuff that the book so far has not addressed at all that you have been feeling?
I mean, a lot of the stuff that the book, a lot of the stuff in the four dads boxes, especially if you're getting into like the third, fourth, fifth months, is about like sympathy pregnancy syndromes. So like you may also experience weight gain.
I've heard about that. Yeah.
Headaches or mood swings or like a lack of or a excess of libido or whatever. Like,
whoa.
I feel like I'm pretty attuned to what my body is doing most of the time, and I don't think I've had a lot of that. Like,
okay,
like I said, a lot of what I've been preoccupied with has been, it's like the kind of provider stuff.
Sure.
Because I don't know, like that was at a strong, if flawed, model for that in my dad, who
okay.
was pretty, who provided for all of us, but was also really, really against taking anybody's help in service of providing. Like he was a good provider, but he had to do it all himself. And I have a strong streak of that too, that I can't like,
yes,
I can't eradicate.
Yeah,
but like
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
And it's not even that that's a bad thing. I don't know, but that's
there's usually a moment where you like in any sort of like scenario need to go, everybody stop, I need 5 minutes to like be like, let Andrew think about this.
Yeah,
after those 5 minutes you're like, okay, but I don't have an answer. But I think I've seen you need to go through that process just because like that's the best way for you to just understand what's going on, which is not a bad thing. It's just the way that you process a problem in an attempt to find a solution.
And there was, I think more early on than now, there were definitely periods when I would get into a pretty like scared or like even upset a little place, because I mean, I'm 33. My life has been pretty much like substantially the same since I was like 26, 27. Like I've had enough money not to be worried about stuff too much, stable relationship, like pretty stable, like financial and job situation. We can do pretty much whatever we want within reason, you know, in terms of like traveling to see friends or to go to weddings or to like go on vacations ourselves. Like we have had this same status quo that's existed for a long time. And then like, even that we both decided like way ahead of time, we tried for 11 months. Like this is definitely, this is a pregnancy that we were trying to make happen for a long time. And yet still it's little stuff like, can I like stay up till 1:30 playing video games if I want to? Can I, like, if I want to go out and sit quietly and read somewhere by myself, like, is that a thing that I'm ever going to be able to do? Like, what's my, I work from home. So like, how, what are the expectations going to be for me as a childcare provider? Because often I think people who work from home are like perceived as having extra free time to do
Correct.
That kind
no,
of thing.
Oh yes. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like it's there's a lot of stuff that happens. Yeah. And to this book's credit, it does say, you know, that what, you know, the stuff you're feeling is normal. It is normal to have a range of emotions about it. It is normal to, even in the case of a quote unquote wanted pregnancy.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It is completely ordinary and typical to have these like bits of doubt or bits of, I don't know.
I wonder if that's a thing that folks in our generation are encountering more than others, or just is a thing that might be happening increasingly. I think what you just said is something that probably a lot of people have experienced, which is folks who are having kids later than a generation or two ago have had more time to set up what their quote unquote adult life is and get into a groove or try out some stuff. And as opposed to like, oh, I'm going to get married right after college and have a kid within a year, which is something people still do.
Yeah.
You know,
my parents dropped out of college at age 21 because they got premaritally pregnant with me.
Sure.
So like my baseline is kind of that.
Yeah. But, well, yeah, it's just different, you know, and
I think that if you, I can't talk about like it's generationally, but if you're talking about trend lines, right? Like,
yes, that's what I mean. Yeah.
There are like more women working now than there would have been when this book was published. I'm not going to say that the safety net is worse. I think the safety net could always be improved, but the book does take pains to talk about. Like the U.S. is one of a tiny, teeny, tiny handful of countries in the world that does not have some kind of paid family leave policy.
I am mandated impressed at the federal that it level. Said that.
It did say, not only does it say that, but it says, if you want to change that, like go and organize and vote about it, which is kind of neat.
I do, Andrew, I do think about that when I actually thought about that today when I was out knocking doors, as I was thinking about my friend Andrew, who I was going to talk about, who is going to have a kid. And I was like, I don't have one. That's why I have time to be out. Like, it was just a thing I was thinking about, and interesting to hear that also come up in this book, because that is not it is not a thing I am trying to be conscious of that, and I think a lot of people are when they engage in like trying to do work in all sorts of spheres.
Yeah, that's good, and that's a double sided thing, because you have like people without kids have more time to do everything, including being politically engaged. But also, as somebody who is expecting a child, all of a sudden I have become much more interested in hearing what every candidate's paid family leave policy
is. I agree. Yeah. Like I don't have the immediate personal investment or lived experience to pull my attention to those things.
Well, and it's not even going to affect me. Like, even if we even if we have a second kid in the next like 2 or 3 years, the odds that anything, even if something has been passed, there will probably be some kind of phase-in period and there will be all kinds of stuff. But I mean, I think part of one reason to push for policies like that, like safety net policies or progressive policies, is like, I think a common argument against them is like, I didn't have this, so why should you need this? And that's just the wrong way to think about it. I think I am worried about a lot of stuff related to childcare, related to lost income, related to even like having the time to have the job that enables me to have insurance, to have a kid. Like, it's all this stuff. And I would love it if people in future generations or even people in like 4 or 5 years did not have to think about it as much, because that is that many more brain cycles that you can dedicate to thinking about other stuff, mm-hmm. to just like enjoying having a little person who you made, who you get, yep. you get to teach them the things that you like and make them like them.
That's really all it is. That's yeah. really what I think you're most excited
about.
That's
parenthood, about. I think, mostly.
What do you think, what do you hope would be your little person's starter Pokemon, Andrew?
Ooh.
And you can pick any generation. This will be our last question. This will take us out. I know you've probably, like, you have deep-seated feelings, even if you haven't thought about this deeply.
I mean, I've always picked the fire type.
Oh, sure.
Fire. I'm ride or die for fire type.
Okay.
So I kind of hope that they also pick up a penchant for the fire type. But, you know, if they pick a grass type, then I'll always be able to show them who's boss. And if they pick a water type, you know, you always want your kid to have it better than you did. And so they'll be able to get one up on their old man.
That's good.
So I'm just, you know, they can make their own way. I think I can find the positive whichever way they decide to go.
That's great. Andrew, thanks for sharing this book and this news with us. I appreciate it.
You are welcome. I am feeling a lot of things.
I bet you are. So everyone, just be cool about all of this.
Everyone be cool.
Just be cool. And if you want to be cool at our email, it's overduepod@gmail.com. If you want to be cool at us on social media, it's twitter.com/overduepod or facebook.com/overduepod. Some folks who reached out, both guessing what this episode would be and responding to last week's Nosferatu episode: Julie, Danielle, Reed, Kelly, Jamie, Anna, Jazz, Sean, Josh, Kira, Chris, Kaylin, Kirk, and many, many more. Thanks, y'all.
I'll just tell you, y'all are better responders than you are guessers.
Just be cool. Andrew, just if folks cool. want to know more about the show, where should they go?
They should go to overduepodcast.com. Up there, we have links to Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and our RSS feed. You can use any of those links to subscribe to the show and get new episodes when they come out every Monday. We have a link to our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/overduepod. You can use that to get bonus episodes early and to suggest books to us. We have a new listener page up there as well. If you are recommending the show to people, show them that page. Those are episodes that we like or that we think other people might like. What else we got? This is our only secret mystery book for the month. Let's talk about what else we're doing just real quick.
If you missed it, we put up the Akata Witch episode, which is our February bonus episode. That's up on the feed if you missed that on Friday. I'm talking about Breakfast at Tiffany's next week, and then Andrew's talking about the sci-fi novel Columbus Day after that. We'll also have some Stop Homer time for you. That's winding down, but we have a special episode for that coming up in the next month or two, so keep an eye out for that. And I think that's it.
I think that's it, everybody. So thanks for making this journey with me.
It's just beginning.
It's only just beginning. All right, everybody. Until we talk to you next week, please expect to try to be happy.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.